This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, Deacon and Tierney, hour number two, coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time, Rocket can. Dodgers, top of the baseball mountain. Congrats. So with the Lakers, it's been a hell of a month or so in L.A. We're going to step away from the World Series for a little bit, although I'm sure we'll circle back to it in hour three, which we definitely will, 5 Eastern. More about the decision to pull Snell, more on Kershaw's legacy, and all that good stuff. Hopefully everybody's doing great. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Back on the tube tomorrow. We have not been on TV the last couple of days for UEFA Soccer. We're back tomorrow, but Twitter's always open. Hit us up, at Tiki and Tierney. And, you know, it's amazing. Like, as much as we've had to modify our sporting calendar here, Teak, everything about 2020 has been unnatural.
Yeah, it's true.
From the length of seasons to the location of games, all this stuff, right? And I don't know that there'll be a bigger challenge in terms of, like, self-policing and trying to snap into a sense of normalcy than watching the Masters in November.
Yeah, I know, because it's going to be in the middle of football season. It's going to feel odd, but it's obviously going to catch our attention because it's the Masters, even if it is in the fall, and it's cold and windy and blustery.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I was looking at the 10-day forecast down in Augusta, which takes us to the 11th, Wednesday the 11th. And there's a lot of days mid-70s, and that's, listen, you can play golf. I played this weekend. I had shorts on. By the way, I got an eagle on Saturday.
Nice.
I got an eagle, man. I forgot to tell you. I got an eagle. I totally forgot to tell you. I was wearing shorts. It was like 52. But the point is, it's going to be really nice during the day. But if you have an early tee time down in Augusta, or you have a late tee time, and they obviously stagger them a bit, you're going to have some chilly mornings and some damp nights, perhaps. So it's going to be different than it is in the spring. But we're joined now by a guy who can help us get a sense of what the course is going to play like, what the season's been like. He's coming off a win. His putter was hot. He was dropping bombs. He made multiple birdie putts from outside of 15 feet as he stormed back to win the Zozo Championship. Patrick Cantlay, who is a really good player. You know golf. You know the name. Patrick, Tiki and Tierney, how you doing today, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, congrats on the win. I was obviously, you know, watching a lot of football over the weekend, but I always make sure I get a little bit of golf, and the leaderboard was pretty heavy up top. You know, Justin Thomas is a name we all know, but, you know, you're good enough to – nobody would say Patrick Cantlay came in the side door or the back door. You're too well-established and a world-class player to say that. But I don't know if anybody really thought you were going to do what you did on Sunday. How'd you feel when you woke up and you got it flowing pretty early, man?
You know, I felt really good. It was a fun week. It was nice to be back in California, which is, you know, LA area, which is home for me. I went to UCLA and grew up in Long Beach. So that was great. And, you know, I just came out of the gates firing. I was just trying to make as many birdies as I could. You know, it seems like every week on the PGA Tour, you got to go even lower than 20 under. You got to get to 20 and then keep going. So the course is on the easier side with 5 par fives, and needed to make a bunch of birdies, and I was fortunate to make 9 on Sunday, and it was just enough to beat those guys.
You know, we were talking before we had you on about the Masters and how it's pushed back into the fall. How has this season been? I mean, it's golf, so it's not as if you know, you're changing your regimen, and your off season is different. Your off seasons are probably much more truncated than people want to give it credit for. But how has this season's shift into the latter part of the year affected you all at all, if at all?
Sure. Well, first, I think the PGA Tour has done a really good job getting us back to playing and allowing us to compete. And I'm really grateful during all these really hard times for everybody that, you know, we've been able to still play and keep working. And I will say it was a little weird, you know, with the season ending and the FedEx Cup ending and having two more majors left to go on this calendar year. And it feels like all these tournaments, for me at least, have been running up as prep into Augusta, which everyone always talks about that when you're on the West Coast swing or the Florida swing before the Masters. And this year it feels like all these tournaments, these fall events, are where your prep is for Augusta. And so that's been the biggest change, is trying to make sure that everything's in good shape come Masters time in a couple weeks.
And you're coming off a nice Masters, so you had some success there a year ago. You were top 10, you finished ninth, you had a good PGA Championship as well. You had a good 2019 period, a bunch of top 10s, and, you know, you're still in your 20s. You're a guy who, you know, theoretically can continue to get better, as I know that that's certainly your desire. But how different will the, like, what can you take from last year's round, aside from confidence, stepping up on that kind of a stage to finish top 10, the actual course, how it will play April down there versus November, it's really different. How will it change the course?
Well, this year in general is going to be totally different with no fans, which is even is scary to think about for Augusta because that place is highlighted by all the fans and all the roars.
Yeah.
Being November, I imagine that it'll be colder. I think it looks like we're going to get decent weather, but it'll be colder. And so the ball won't go as far. And that makes the par fives harder to reach. And depending on the wind, if the wind changes around, I've played that golf course in a north wind before, and it's more difficult. And so the golf course is very long, and I think that kind of gets, you know, people don't talk about that because you can get to some of the par fives, especially 13 and 15. But if it's wet, like if it were to rain and get wet, the golf course plays really long, so you have to be really on top of your game with your long irons. And I expect that to be the case if it's a little colder and it being, you know, this time of year.
You know, Patrick, you mentioned the fans. And, I mean, BT and I are hacks, so we I don't want fans. I don't want anybody watching
me.
You know what I mean?
I hope no one's there.
It's like when the cart person comes around, I'm like, can you, like, look the other way? Because I don't want to, like, embarrass myself.
You're driving out to the second tee so no one watches you.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
You're joking, but that's not far from the truth. But, I mean, do you guys thrive on the fans, or is it the same game without, you know what I mean? Like, emotionally, and, you know, when you're standing at a tee shot or a putt or, you know, a difficult shot. Is it the same with or without the fans for you guys?
You know, I think everyone has kind of gotten used to the no fans, and they're able to ramp up internally and get up for the moment. And if they haven't got, you know, used to the no fans after this many tournaments and you know, can kind of ramp themselves up, then that's kind of their fault at this point, I think. But I know we're all excited to have the fans back whenever they are to come back. And like I said, it's going to be very just sad to be at the Masters with no fans, simply because they add so much to that tournament.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we're used to that. We love feeding off the fans and love being able to show off a little bit. And so the biggest adjustment is, you know, hitting a good shot and hearing absolutely nothing. Because usually we get that positive reinforcement right away. I mean, I hold a shot at 7 when I was an amateur, and it took 15 seconds for it to land on the green and roll in. It rolled in from a big bowl. They have that bowl location on the right on Sunday. And the fans, you know, they get, they go crazy when you make it, right?
Yeah.
And so stuff like that is so cool at Augusta because everyone knows the place and knows the course and knows those hole locations. So it will be strange if something like that happens and you don't get that reaction.
Got it. We're talking to Patrick Cantlay, of course, really good golfer coming off a nice win, come from behind win, the Zozo Championship. Great field as well. His putter was red hot. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. The Masters is coming up in a few weeks down in Georgia. Augusta, obviously, he had a nice top 10 finish there last year. You know, the offseason's different because, you know, you guys haven't gone, usually at this point, it's over. The PGA Championship in a conventional year, you know, it's over in August, even though it's been flipped in a non-Ryder Cup or, you know, no President's Cup, whatever. Golf is kind of done after the FedEx Cup. And, you know, we see the big boys you know, right around, yeah, maybe February, March, and some guys come back bigger, some guys come back thinner. I feel like it's going to be different because of the calendar this year, but do you believe that guys will use whatever offseason they have to modify their bodies, to test the limits, and to try to do what DeChambeau did last offseason? Would you ever mess around with that?
That's an interesting question. I do think that guys have always used the offseason to shore up any weaknesses in their game. And now guys are maybe using their off time to try and hit it farther. And there's more general knowledge or better education, better teachers on how to hit it far. So before it was, you know, almost thought of as a natural ability. But I think you're seeing now guys are working towards it. And I think trying to maximize distance is always going to be beneficial as long as you can, you know, keep hitting it relatively straight.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's something I'm trying to work towards, but I'm going to do so slowly and methodically and hopefully over time, opposed to all at once.
Well, yeah. Here's what would worry me, Patrick. And listen, I know that you guys have the great coaching, that, you know, every freeze frame. So I get it. You have technology that we don't. And you have skill that we don't. So I'm sure that many of you can do it. My fear would be if you focus, not you, but in general, you focus too much on hammering the ball and stretching the limits of the golf ball, that you neglect touch around the green, which, as you know, that's where you put the, you know, the red numbers up. And let's face it, as much as DeChambeau was crushing the ball early, you know, he'd be wedging from 70 yards out. He'd be 20 feet away from the pin, which for me is great. For a pro, it's terrible. So you have to be fair or you have to be aware to make sure you don't neglect the other aspects of the game. And I would think that that's probably a challenge if you're trying to add 25 yards off the tee.
Well, I totally agree. Anytime you spend your time practicing in a certain area, say hitting it far, you're not going to have as much time to spend on the rest of the game. But I do think you said something very interesting there, is that if he has 70 yards and he hits it to 20 feet, it's a terrible shot. But he's still got 20 feet. So if someone else is coming in from 130 because they, you know, laid up with a 3-wood to the corner of the dogleg and they hit it to they hit it to 20 feet from 130, you're going, okay, that was an average shot, but they both still have 20 feet. So
that's kind of
the argument that I think guys would make for spending time trying to hit it far, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, I don't know how many guys are like workout warriors. And, you know, Bryson clearly got in the gym and pounded iron, you know, to get that big. Like, how hard is that to do for golfers in large, you know, for you specifically, but just in general? Like, I grew up playing football, so I learned how to, like, lift and deadlift and power lift and do all that crazy stuff when I was, you know, 18 years old. How hard would it be for guys to change their workout routines, if you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is what you're used to doing, and then also I think the drawbacks would be like the long-term effects. If you do it too quickly or you do it not the right way, are you going to put more stress on joints? Are you going to potentially hurt yourself? So I think for me, I'd like to do it slowly and not kind of, you know, go too fast. So I can maybe limit the mistakes or the potential setbacks. But I do think it's the way that the game is going. And it makes sense. I mean, your body is your most important tool. So guys spending more time trying to make their bodies bigger, stronger, faster, that just makes sense. And that just is the evolution of the game. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. You know, and I wonder also, you know, as you change your game, do you think courses are going to start changing significantly?
Well, that's a complicated issue. You have seen a lot of courses change, and I think Augusta's the biggest, best example. They have not unlimited space, but more space than 99% of golf courses, and they have an unlimited budget, so they can change or modify the course, and they do often to kind of counteract any distance gains as far as how it plays, how the strategy of the golf course plays. A lot of courses don't have that capacity.
Yeah.
So Pebble Beach, for example, there is no more space. There are no modifications that you can do to Pebble Beach. And it's still you know, stands out as one of the most iconic, best golf courses in the world. So I think more the question is, I don't think there's a lot of golf courses or a lot of even resources. When you think about a golf course that goes from 6,800 yards to, let's just say, 7,800 yards, that's 1,000 more yards, and I don't know how many more square yards that is to just maintain, just from a fertilizer, water, maintenance crew that has to maintain that. So it's so much more expensive to handle these change and modifications to the golf course and then just keep up with it. So I just don't know how many golf courses can do it, and I think we're at maybe a crossroads where if we don't do something, courses like Pebble Beach will just they will lose some of their integrity. That scares me more. I don't know how many golf courses can actually keep changing.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot. That Change is actually scary. When you say that, it does make it scary. All right, Marcus by Goldman Sachs. I know they're part of your team now, and it's obviously fantastic to have sponsors. And your father, just reading, has been a big part of your inspiration and your quest for greatness and the details. You know, I know you're going to talk about Marcus from Goldman Sachs, but your father wrote you a letter that you hang on to. What was in that letter?
You know, my dad and I have a really good relationship, and he took me to all my tournaments growing up, you know, which is a lot of time. And I think looking back on it, I maybe didn't realize how much time and effort it was because it was so normal. But now that I realize, you know, he spent a long time investing his time and his energy into my golf. And so I can't thank him enough for all of that. And some of my success is a direct result of that. And so, you know, he wrote me a letter when I turned pro, just basically telling me to do the right thing and to enjoy the time that I had playing professional golf, and, you know, appreciate the hard work, but to, you know, not forget where you came from and what brought you there, and to basically be thankful for it all, and you know, have character and respect the game, and you know, just have integrity in everything that you do all the time.
And never lay up. always go for the pin, son. Get that wood. Leave that iron in the bag. Come on.
Yeah, that might have been snuck in there somewhere in the fringes.
He sounds like a really good man. Great sage advice. You're having a hell of a year. Great win, really. That putter was just... If you're watching football and you missed it from this weekend, go check out the highlights. Patrick was just rolling it like a surgeon. So nice to see you do that. Good form getting ready for the Masters. Patrick Cantlay, who played well at Augusta last year, a top 10. Looking forward to seeing it, man. Thanks for hopping on, Patrick. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Yep, same here. You got it. So, Teague, I know we got a break here, but I can't have a pro golfer, you know, thwart my second eagle in 14 years. So I got to just tell you this real quick.
Yeah,
so I'm playing on Saturday, right?
It's pretty stellar, dude.
Right? I'm playing on Saturday.
Oh, by the way, I got an eagle.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, dude.
It's only my second one. And I started so, like, at double bogey. Whatever, cracked a drink. You know, usual stuff. Double bogey.
All right, I'm good for the day.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. No pressure. It's a good buddy. Next hole, bogey. You know, a little good, a little bad, whatever. The next hole, it's the third hole. It's all uphill. So when I say my drive went about 240, it doesn't sound incredibly – and I didn't flush it either, but – it's all uphill, and you really lose distance. And then it's a dog leg par 5, and I carried the dog just enough so my tee shot was in the first cut, and okay. I had a clean look at the pin, even though there was a tree that was slightly obscuring my path. But I knew I could do it if I hit it right. Anyway, so I look at the cart at my club, and it says 217. I'm like, it's hybrid territory. If I hit it well, I'm good. I hit a 3 hybrid from 217. Teague, 11 feet from the pin, hit the putt eagle. Boom.
Nice.
So there's that, right? So I'm thrilled. The whole day is made, no matter what. Whole year is made. Wheels get a little wobbly, as they always do eventually, right? I'm having grand vision. I'm definitely breaking 90 today, which I've only done once or twice this summer. So I have 81 after 16 holes. I par the par 3 17th, hit a 7 iron, 165, about 10 feet. Hit it really well. Hole high, get down into par, right?
Yep.
So now I'm sitting at 85 on the 18 tee box. If I par it, I get an 89. If I get a 5, I get a 90. I got a 9. I got a 9, Teague. I dribbled the first tee off the – I dribbled. I hadn't done it all. Dribbled.
Man. That's
dribbled.
Miserable. That's miserable.
Dribbled. My buddy goes, dude, take a mulligan. I'm like, I'm trying to break – I can't take a mulligan when I'm really trying to break 90. No. Then I walk up. It's not even past the ladies' tee. All right? What happens? I dribbled another one,
oh,
buddy.
Oh, Lord.
Got
dude,
in my
that's,
head.
That's when you get the pitching wedge. You just put it, like, at the very front of the fairway and no, go from
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, right? But, Teak, I'm still, like, 377 yards away. I'm hitting three. It's a par four. I'm so pissed. I rifle that hybrid again. I hit it on the other fairway left. I pounded it. Thankfully, at least like 200 yards. It ate up some room. Then I chunked one. Then I flew the grid. What? 994.
But you got an eagle. That's all you get. That's
but
all.
I got
the
an eagle,
stops
baby.
At the eagle. The story stops at the
like
eagle.
Like an eagle. Got an eagle. All right. Jay Wright, Villanova. Very interesting comments about the need for a bubble or pods. Otherwise, college hoops is in big trouble. We hit that story next. Teaky and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Teaky and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, Trevor Lawrence, still non-committal on his future, but is it just about the Jets, or is it about some other teams he might be trying to strategically avoid? Teague and I'll get to that coming up next segment. Let's play this for you and then react. This was from Big East Virtual Media Day. Really, none of the other conferences, or to my knowledge, maybe not none, but very few of the other big basketball conferences even bothered with a virtual media day.
I haven't heard anything.
No. Good job by the Big East who had that today. Jay Wright, obviously the elder statesman, multi-time champion, great coach, and they might be the best team in the country again. Jay Wright on college hoops and a bubble. Now, this is on the phone. The quality's not great, so you have to really listen, but it's worth a listen. Says this is going to be very tough to navigate.
The bubble is the answer. There's no doubt. If you want to ensure that you're going to get all your games in, the bubble's the answer. That's all the medical experts will agree to that. Challenge, Zach, for us in college athletics, and specifically college basketball, is our players are students, they're not employees. So to force someone to go into a bubble is shaky. And number two, if you do it for the men, you have to do it for the women, which doubles the cost for everybody. So I don't think the schools really have the finances to do that.
As I was going to say, not cost effective there, obviously. But, you know, I think that more coaches need to really be out there. The ones that your coach will be on that list, Tom Izzo will be on that list, Roy Williams will be on that list. You know, the big, big name coaches, Jay Wright, clearly, they need to hammer that point home. If there's not bubbles or pods, there's no way. Well, I don't want to say there's no way. Mm-hmm. I really don't think we're going to be able to get through a college season that represents a decent college season.
Yeah, just look what's happening in the Big Ten, as we just talked about Wisconsin yesterday, and I think we even brought it up in Inbounds and Out of Bounds again today. You missed 21 days, and it's just for students, I think. I don't think it's for coaches, because Paul Chryst also tested positive, but they're not saying he's going to miss 21 days out at Wisconsin. This is football now. But if that's the policy for football, then it has to be the policy for all the other sports.
100%.
You know, and so it's gonna include basketball, and they have a good program out there. But if you have two or three guys missing 3 weeks, as BT pointed out yesterday, and it was such an astute point, we think of college football, it's like, yeah, you miss 3 weeks, it's 3 weeks. And it's three games out of usually 12. In this case, there's going to be three out of eight, but there's enough players, you would think, that you can still put a team out there. If there's four or five guys on a college basketball team that are out 3 weeks, and they're going to miss 9 to 10 games, and if it's more than, you know, half the team, what do you do? It gets really complicated with basketball and the cost. The part about the cost is the most important thing to point out. We already know that a lot of these colleges and universities lost a significant amount of revenue last season when there was no NCAA tournament, like millions of dollars they all missed out on. Their budgets cannot support putting their individual teams or conferences in a bubble.
No, you can't. And, you know, I got an email today from St. John's for the schedule, right? I mean, obviously, I communicate with them, but they put out some of their schedule.
Yeah, how are they going to do that for?
I don't even know if we're going to be doing the games. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, their schedule, and they're not unique in this. It's just that I happen to do the game, so I look at the schedule more intently. It's just a mishmash of who can we play and when do we think we can play. I really have no idea.
Yeah.
They unveiled the first four games, I think, of the conference in the Big East and some non-conference. Each school could do that, obviously, at their own pace. But I'm looking at the schedule saying, you know, credit to the decision makers trying to piece this together, but it just seems like a labyrinth where, you know, you think there's a door at the end or you think there's a hole. I'm not so sure that there is. The schedule is going to be very tricky. Very tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge impediment for all these schools.
Yeah. Now, what happens, BT, if the regular season gets so... I mean, because they have to have an NCAA tournament. They have to. They they absolutely have to. We've said this many times, and because of the money that we're just alluding to they lost last year, they can't lose all that money again. So there's going to be an NCAA tournament. So let's say that the regular season, conference tournaments, everything else is all out of whack and disjointed and, you know, is finished hodgepodge. And what's the best way to put together an NCAA tournament? Is it to take like preseason rankings? How do you even do this?
Just want to make sure we're on the same. So you say, give me an example. They play how many games roughly?
Let's say they play before it happened, like 15 games. You know what I mean?
See, 15 would be enough. If it was 15, what I would do is I would take, you know, I'd use the metrics, also incorporate the eye test a bit. But for the top 50, I think you'd be able to really rather easily identify 50 of the top. I'm not saying it's foolproof and it's perfect, but 50 of the top best programs in the country. Then, you know, I'd do for the other 68, I'd throw them in a hat.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd do something totally weird. Like, you know what? We have no way of determining. So here's the rest of the, here's the other 273 Division I schools that are not in our top 50. And bang, we're pulling out 18. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's as good as anything, right?
I don't know. I wish I knew because, man, I really want to get hyped up for hoops, especially college. I do. But listening to Jay, I'm happy that he said it loudly today, confidently, you know, forcefully. Jay's not the kind of guy who's going to be, confrontational.
No. He's just going to be real. He's going to keep it real.
He's going to keep it
real. He kept it real.
And he understands his status and the state in the game, and his words carry juice. So that's out there. Wanted to get it on our show. You know, I don't know that it solves anything, but it continues conversation and it continues the, you know, really, this just further underscores the need for a bubble or a pod. But as Jay said, if you do it for the men, you have to do it for the women. It's not a revenue thing. It's a what's right and what's wrong thing.
Yes.
You can't say, well, we're going to protect the men and the women. Well, good luck. No, there's no way. You do it for everybody. It's either all encompassing or it's nothing. And from a cost effective point of view, that's incredibly punitive with no fans and no tournament last year. I don't have the answer. I can drone on and on. I honestly don't have the answer, except that I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, that's all you can do right now. Hope that none of these kids, and it's unlikely because they spread too easily on these college campuses. You hope that they stay safe.
That's right. That's right. All right, Teek, let's get the update from Mac. Coming up, so Trevor Lawrence, we had Tim Tebow on the show yesterday. Tim weighed in some really interesting thoughts on what he would advise Trevor Lawrence to do if the Jets get the first overall pick, okay? But is it really just about the Jets? Are there other teams that Trevor Lawrence might be leveraging against to not go there and maybe send some messages? We'll get to it. It's an interesting conversation. We'll do it after Axe Update, which is right now. Here's Rich. Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of two elite teams fighting for divisional supremacy when the Pittsburgh Steelers bring their big-time defense to Baltimore as they hook up with Lamar Jackson and the equally souped-up Ravens coming off a bye. That's always a money showdown, plus a key AFC East battle as the Bills and the Pats hook up. And you know the Bills are trying to flex on New England, who is just beating the tar out of everybody in that division for 20 years. A little payback. Join JB and the guys as they get you set for all the day's action. It's the NFL Today, starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Sunday, the NFL, as always, is on CBS. All right, Teekee and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network back tomorrow. No TV the last couple of days. You wait for soccer, but we'll get back on regular schedule tomorrow. All right, let's play something for you and then obviously react. So Trevor Lawrence, there is no doubt he's going first overall. There is increasing doubt as to whether or not he will actually leave college. And the reason that doubt has now become a storyline is because, well, he pretty much said it. Here's Trevor Lawrence yesterday talking to reporters.
I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to see how things unfold. I think there's a lot of factors in that. But honestly, just really playing this year, putting everything I have into it, not really focusing on next year, whether, you know, I leave or stay, whatever. Obviously, I have the option to do either one. Kind of my mindset's been that I'm going to move on, but who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. So just really focusing on this year, not trying to look ahead, not trying to worry about that. Obviously, I can't control it, and really just trusting that God has a plan for me no matter where that is, no matter where I go, whether that's across the country, whether that's close to home, where I stay another year, no matter what it is, you know, we'll work it out. So I'm not sure. That's a tough one, but we'll see how it
all unfolds. Most part, benign generalities is how he addressed that. Now, in my opinion, there is no way Trevor Lawrence going back to school next year. That is not happening. And here's the even if you think, and by the way, it wouldn't be ludicrous for anybody to try to avoid that team because they are so utterly bereft of talent, but more importantly, so without vision and direction that, you know, you wouldn't really want to go there if you don't have to. So if you have a little leverage and you can flex on that, why wouldn't you try to do that? Eli did it back in the day. Others have done it as well. John Elway. The thing, though, and this is what Trevor Lawrence has to know, and of course he does, they are so bereft of talent that there's a chance that they have the first overall pick in 2021, and they take it then anyway. So
you mean 2022?
Pardon me, 2022. Thank you. Trevor Lawrence is coming out, and he will be in the NFL next year. To me, this leverage movement comes with the influence regarding the hiring of the head coach, not whether or not he goes pro. He's going pro.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the question then becomes, how does he put himself in the best spot for success? Now, you got to assume, because it's just the nature of football, that if you're the number one pick at quarterback, it's different when it's like a lineman or I don't know, wide receiver, somebody, another position. If you're the number one pick at quarterback, that means that there's something gone seriously wrong with that organization for a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. So they've been bad for a little while. Look at the Jets, look at the Giants, look at Arizona, even for a couple seasons there. Just like things had gone so wrong, you needed to reset with a guy you believe is going to be your franchise, Baker Mayfield with the Browns, et cetera. So while it's scary to think about it, and this is from a Trevor Lawrence standpoint, man, I'm going to go to this Jets organization and they're terrible. There's also the challenge in a kid who at 15 threw 40-something touchdown passes in high school. I think it was 43 touchdown passes when he was a sophomore in high school, and then has done nothing but excel ever since, in high school and obviously in college. He's lost one game at Clemson. Now, they have a ton of talent around him, but I think that there's a mentality that it takes for a guy like that to be successful, and it comes with the challenges that he's faced. Now, it's a significant one in the NFL, but I don't even know if he's so scared of it that he would shy away from the Jets. He might just say, you know what, it is what it is, and I'm going to make them better because I think I know I have that talent, and hopefully people want to come play with me. You know?
Yeah, that's how I see it too. Now, we had the great Tim Tebow on the show yesterday, and Tim spoke about that leverage and all the things that Trevor needs to do in terms of evaluating every, not just the Jets, but, you know, obviously Tim played for the Jets for a minute, the situation if and when he's drafted. Here's what Tim Tebow said about that.
I really am a huge believer that in college, but even more so in the NFL, your success is so much predicated on the system and what's around you. When these quarterbacks are in the right system, where the system fits who they are, how they play, how they can compete and how they can succeed, and they put good pieces around them, then guys do good. It's crazy how that happens. But when they go into other places where there's turmoil and chaos and they don't have good players around them, then guess what? They're not as good. And I think there's been so many quarterbacks that had a chance of being good that weren't put in a good system around them, that weren't put in a position to succeed. So I would really encourage Trevor to find out, how are they going to use you? How are they going to support you? If I was him, I would genuinely try to evaluate everything and look at it with open eyes, because he's so good and he's so talented. He needs a great prospect. He will have leverage.
He will. And how he exercises that is what we're discussing. And listen, we had a great chat with Tim. Tim was on a good 15, 16 minutes. I would advise you go check it out. We hit some other storylines. You know, who's the fourth best team in college football? You know, could a non-big traditional, you know, Power 5 team maybe backdoor their way into the playoff? It was a great spot. Tim was awesome. Radio.com. It's on YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Listen, the bottom line is this. I am not a big fan of players, whether it's first overall pick in the NBA draft or, you know, quarterbacks going first overall, coming in and completely dictating the terms of, you know, who's hired, who stays, who goes, board, stuff like that. But, you know, in the situation of the Jets, at least, and maybe even the Jaguars, like, let's say if the Jets messed around and won a game or two, and the Jaguars finish, which they won't, but and they finish, you know, 2-14, and the Jaguars finish 1-15. Not the most crazy thing, a scenario. I mean, I guess there's a percentage that that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would also apply this to the Jaguars. I would go against my better senses and sensibilities and say, you know what? I'm talking for the Jets' point of view and the Jaguars. I'm going to let this young man determine who we hire as the coach, provided it's not some unproven wild card that we can't vet and we don't believe in.
I would actually do that
for Trevor Lawrence.
I don't know if he can do that. I mean, how does he know? It's a different game. I know he's
obviously don't know because look at who they keep bringing in.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you just talk facetiously. It's like he'd probably have as good a chance of picking a winner.
That's part of the point.
but I just don't know how he would know who to hire. I mean, maybe there's, if he hired, I don't know who his agent is or who it's going to be. I'm sure he knows already, but whoever that's going to be maybe can help, you know, with that decision. But, you know, I think so much of it will depend on, you know, whoever drafts him, whether it's the Jets or it's the Jaguars, what do they have? Like, interestingly, the Jaguars, they have some talent down there, you know, and so it actually might not be a bad spot if they end up being, you know, at that point, the Falcons, what happens if the Falcons end up, you know, falling apart? I mean, they're already kind of halfway falling apart, but what happens if they don't win any more games and the Jets mess around and win a couple and they get to, and they end up getting the number one overall pick?
Atlanta?
Yeah, the Falcons, yeah, Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, that seems like a situation that's ideal for him to be a Hall of Famer in 3 years. You know
why,
what I
though?
Mean?
Because he's got receivers? And because he's sit behind Matt Ryan for a year?
Yeah, exactly.
But I wouldn't want to sit. That would be a deterrent for me. I want to play.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes sat, though, for a year.
Yeah, but everybody else plays.
True, but, I mean, you got to sit for some time. You know what I mean? And
not if you're the best prospect since Andrew Luck. You don't have to sit.
True. But who knows? I mean, the circumstance is going to dictate it as it happens. I don't know if I see him as a guy that's going to try to stay away from New York. I think it's become a media narrative.
Yep. Lazy one. I don't think it's happening.
I don't know if kids are that way anymore. I mean, not anymore, but like they're not thinking about it. The Mannings thought about it because they're the Mannings and they have they're the you know, the face of the league basically, and they have been for decades now. John Elway, he was a different cat, and it's a different era. I don't see Trevor Lawrence taking this power play, at least not so publicly that we judge him for it. If that makes sense.
It makes sense. Let me ask you this: who would you hire? Let's assume the Jets go winless.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you hire? And when would you fire Gase to send a signal to Lawrence?
Probably okay. like the then Redskins, now Washington football team did.
Okay, so like soon, actually.
Carolina. Either or, to be honest with you, because the Panthers, like they didn't feel like they were completely falling apart. The Panthers when they moved on from Ron Rivera,
yep.
It just felt like it's probably time, right? Washington felt like they were completely falling apart. And so if I'm the Jets, who are more like Washington than Carolina, I'd probably do it sooner rather than later.
Okay. And who would your... I'm asking you to think in your mental Rolodex, everybody that you know in the NFL, mm-hmm. knowing where they've been for 10 years, Teak, Jets. 10.
Yeah.
Who would you offer the job to first? You own the Jets. Who is your main target? Number one target.
Lincoln Riley.
You see, I wouldn't even do, I mean, I'd be fine with that. Here's what I would do. I would actually try to trade for Sean Payton. I really would. Yeah, I mean, you laugh. Coaches have been traded for it.
Yeah.
Happy with Parcells. I would make a trade. I would need to know that, like, I'm bringing a guy in.
He just signed a five-year extension.
So what? Money means nothing to Johnson. Pay the check. They've got the money. Give up the draft equity. You've got a million picks. You get the coach. You get the quarterback. You have a starting point.
Interesting. I just don't know if that can happen.
I don't know if I can roll the – I want to see Eric Bieniemy get a job. You can't bring him to fix this mess.
No.
You can't.
You got to have someone who's been an established head coach for a while.
But not a retread. You're going to have to make a bolt. What, do you want Jason Garrett to move
no,
over?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
No. That's why I said college. You go college. Because we've seen it working. And we've seen the...
Hasn't worked much.
We have seen it work.
Hasn't worked much.
Cliff Kingsbury's doing a good job.
But that's only recent example. Everybody else fails.
Well, who else is there? I mean, there haven't been a lot of examples. I'm trying to think of any of these college coaches that have come.
And Nick Saban flopped with Miami.
Yeah, I'm talking about recent. Forget
right.
Nick Saban.
Well, there haven't been many recent.
I know. Matt Rhule is
Bill
doing
O'Brien.
Matt Rhule is doing a hell of a job right now.
Matt Rhule's good.
Bill O'Brien is. I mean, he's a previous generation to me. I'm talking about these current college coaches that have come into the NFL. There's only been a hand. There's only been a couple. Now that I think about it, it's Kingsbury, who surprisingly did really well because he didn't have a ton of success in college. Matt Rhule, who even though the Carolina Panthers are 2-4, they're sub 500.
Yeah.
They're in every game, you know. So it's other than the Buccaneers game where they lost by two touchdowns, every game they're in, and it feels like they compete every week. So I don't know. I just feel like the NFL is changing a little bit.
It is.
So it's not. You don't necessarily need. You got to have NFL experience to be successful in the NFL. I don't think that's the MO any longer.
I don't really disagree. You just add in the added. The element of New York and the pressure, and I don't know, Peyton's appealing. Maybe I call Harbaugh. I don't know. We got time to think about this. Back to the World Series. Dodgers, champs.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.